In this bonus episode of Fictional Hangover, we discuss writing in books, Charlotte's Web, having half an emotion, musicals, and Clueless Moxie with Libba Bray, author of Beauty Queens and a million other fantastic things. Author of the musical Shitstorm.
Hope we're in the acknowledgements for that one.
Me too.
Hey everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, podcast about young adult and new adult books, series and authors that is full of spoilers. I'm Claire.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we are talking to Libba Bray. Yes, Libba Bray.
Yay.
We're just going to go and jump straight into it because, quite frankly, me and Amanda are far too excited and we don't want to keep you waiting.
Yay! Okay, enjoy! Hooray! Yay!
So, hello!
Hi!
Hi!
Thanks for joining us.
We feel like we've been internet stalking you for quite some time and now you're here.
I feel bad because I'm so bad about social media. I just, you know, sometimes forget that it exists, and I'm often like, you know, some kind of underground lair doing things. And my friends also talk about this, where they're like, "Where have you been?" And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. It's is it January 31st?" It's like, "No, it's March."
You know? Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we've been stalking you since we started doing the Diviners on the podcast, and
yeah.
And you had the lovely January Lavoie on.
Oh yes. My god, that is amazing.
Yeah, she's my hero.
She's my hero. She's phenomenal. I mean, phenomenally talented, wonderful human, and just.
Oh, she was brilliant. Amanda literally turned to goo during the conversation.
Like, I did.
You were full on Star Trek.
Yeah.
It was just so funny.
Now it's even better.
Yeah.
Because I look like this.
You look fantastic. You look like a little bit like Morticia Adams, Beauty Queen, which is like, it's hitting my sweet spot. It's like goth. And in Texas Beauty Queen at the same time. And I just don't think it could be anything better.
Our Twitter account has gained sentience and it emulates Morticia Adams quite regularly. So I think you've hit the sweet spot there as well.
It's good. That's my life goal.
Channel my important.
Yes. Stuff. Yes. Work up your dignity now. So, which character from Beauty Queens was your favorite to write, your least favorite, all of those sorts of things? And then you also did the voices for the audiobook, so tell us about that too. Which was your favorite, your least favorite? Did you think, why did I do that voice? Oh my God, why? What's wrong with me?
In terms of writing, I always say that my favorite character is the character that I'm writing at that moment.
Yeah.
And I will say that it was really fun to write Taylor Renee Crystal Hawkins. One, she is Miss Texas, and I did come from Texas and from the hometown of two Miss Americas. So it was fun to write her, but also because she changes so much. Yeah. Over the course of the novel, and she has all of her beliefs not only challenged but kind of ripped away from her, and then she's in free fall. So it was an interesting character to write. I will say that the character that kind of opened the book up for me, there's always a moment in the book, in the writing, because I will think, I'm never going to get this. I don't know why anybody let me write a book. I don't know how to write a book. Somebody else has to write this book. The other books were a fluke. And then there's usually a moment where I always say, get under the skin, you know? And for me, it's almost always a sidebar. Like, I will just have a moment where I'm like, oh, just fuck it. I'm going to just do what I want to do. And so for me, it was the moment, it was writing about Mary Lou.
Yeah.
And that whole part that's almost like a short story, that was the part that kind of opened it up for me, because I don't write in order. And so that was also fun because it was a moment that really helped me get to the heart of stuff that I was trying to write. As far as doing the audiobook, wow, that was a trip. I am grateful for people like January Lavoie, who are so talented and can do that stuff. It's hard work. There's a thank God. And so somebody who can kind of also remind you, oh wait, you were doing this accent. And I actually hosted the Audies, I think it was that year maybe, or the next year. And I did this short film about narrating a video or narrating an audiobook. I have never had so many oranges in my life. So, I was fortunate that there were wonderful people working with me who could say, like, oh, wait, listen back to this. You're not quite doing the same accent. You're not quite, getting this. And so, but it was, I think I was there for maybe 5 days.
Wow.
So it was like 5 very long days.
Yeah.
And then I walked
Why
out.
Why did I write so many characters?
Right, exactly.
I should have killed them all.
New thing, the book is now a haiku. Okay. but it was tremendous fun. I had a good time.
I really enjoyed listening to the audiobook, especially I listened to it from the library, from Overdrive, but they used the CD version. So you've got your, oh, which one am I on now? I don't have that many fingers. Like that part is still in there. Like, oh my God, I love these like track breaks.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So that was so great.
Yeah, that was probably I forgot. I had to improv all that stuff because, we were just like, oh yeah, what are we going to do?
I love the one where I was like, I think I got my period when I was 12. And I'm like, what the heck? Where did that come from?
Oh, come on.
So good. So good.
This is why I love listening to the audiobook. The strange things always happen to strange places. Sorry?
I said they gave me a mic. That was their first mistake.
Well, that's their life lesson.
Never again.
I can always imagine, like, why did I write so many characters? Why did I make them from all over the world? How do I speak British again? This one's a Geordie? Right. Let's pick one of the hardest accents in Britain to try and emulate. Bravo. I still haven't got Amanda to do a Geordie accent yet, as much as I do try.
One day. One day.
I'm happy to leave it to the pros from now on.
Claire, what's our next question?
Which beauty queen would you most like to be stranded with, and what skills would you bring to the island?
Oh, which beauty queen would I most want to be stranded with? Maybe Nicole, because she does have a bit of medical knowledge, which I think would be helpful. And she also has there's a certain calm to her that I liked, because that would not be me. And it would probably be nice to be stuck with Nicole. And, bless her, she would be stuck with me. And what skills do I bring? Complaining?
That's an observational skill.
Ooh, that water sure is cold. Wow.
That's observational. That's fine. That's a good skill. This is a leaf.
A shelter. I think a shelter would be good. Some kind of sheltering shelter type shelter thing.
It has like a roofy thing.
Yeah.
And we need some digging implements.
I'll just use my head because I've got a tray in my head.
I was going to say, you don't need protection from the elements. You've got it already.
So I would be there to state the obvious and say things like, this looks so much easier on TV.
Is sarcasm a useful skill?
I would give out compliments like, dehydration looks good on you. Not many people can pull that off, but you're rocking.
So observational skills, planning, sarcasm. Is sarcasm a skill?
Yes. Yes.
Definitely a useful skill in life.
I like to think I've been honing it for some time.
I have experience.
Yes, we are all well-versed in sarcasm.
So, if there's one thing that the Beauty Queens book highlights is, though, don't mess with Beauty Queens. They're badasses, and they've got skills. Mad skills.
Yeah, definitely. After being rescued from a deserted island, what is your celebratory meal? Or, to make it a little more timely, where are you going to go as soon as the quarantines are lifted and it's safe to go out again?
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. Oh, what a time. Well, it's interesting. I actually used, it was funny because thinking about my favorite meal or the meal that would be celebratory, I would have said, I would have gone like the full, like fried chicken, macaroni and cheese, collard greens and biscuit or cornbread. Mm. But I've actually used this time to transition to a vegetarian diet.
Oh,
so wow. I would not be eating that. But I would. Where would I go, or where would I like to go when may we all be able to come out of lockdown and do these things? I would just want to patronize one of my local Brooklyn restaurants, because I miss those guys, and it would just be nice to see their faces. So it wouldn't really matter. It doesn't matter what I'm eating. It would just be nice to see everybody again, and hopefully see everybody again.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna stand there and go, "It's you! No, it's you! And you're real. Can I touch you?" You're just poking everybody's face. Like,
you're a real person.
I'm such a hugger. I'm a very demonstrative person. So just the thought of like, going forward for quite some time, I think that's just not going to be a thing. We're not even going to, and I know Dr. Fauci was saying we shouldn't even shake hands.
That was testified by the fact that my prime minister went into a ward of corona patients, shook everybody's hand, and then had to go to intensive care because he is a muppet.
My eyes are rolling all the way back at my head right now. Just, I don't think they're going to come back.
Right, moving on.
Get past
that. It's not exactly it's not exactly like we have a firm hand at the helm.
No, we have a tiny orange hand at the helm.
Do you know what I've been craving food-wise?
Cheetos, right?
No. Caribbean food. There's a restaurant chain in Britain called Turtle Bay, and they do the best Caribbean curries. And it's just absolutely phenomenal. I have really, really fancy one. And I'm constantly thinking about them. And you get these gorgeous dumplings with them. And I'm like, I need to get some. But I don't know when it's going to happen. Mm. What about you, Amanda? You could be craving anything.
There's this really great pizza place. Claire, I've sent you plenty of pictures of me eating the giant slices of Tallarico's pizza. That's what I want. I want a giant slice from Tallarico's and like be there in the restaurant. Like, that's what I want.
Yeah. This is on the list. This is on the Seattle visit list when we find eventually meet in person.
Yes.
I see you guys have not met in person.
Mm-mm.
No.
Nope. Nope.
Well, I'm glad that you guys found each other.
Yes.
So are we.
So are we, yeah.
So I'm gonna move on for Beauty Queens.
Yes.
The tiara is coming off and the gloves coming on.
Oh, does that mean I can take my hair down?
No.
Damn it.
No, it's like that for life. You have to live with that. You have to face the consequences of your big hair.
No, no. There are no consequences with this hair.
There is when you want to try and get through doorways. And
it's a good thing I'm so short.
I need to know. Just fit. With the diviners, okay, Theta and Memphis totally shipped them from the outset. And I love Theta. She's like a literary hero of mine now. And Memphis is just flipping delightful. Was there any point as you were writing any of the four books, you thought, Theta and or Memphis are going to have to die or not fare very well? And did you have any plans to kill one of them but realise that if you did, I would have staged a revolt and it would have gone all French Revolution style?
No, I knew that they were going to be together in the end.
Thank goodness.
I just felt like that would have been too bleak.
Yeah,
it would have been too much of the King of Crows if they had gone, because I mean it was already a roller coaster.
Yeah, that was I always say the last book in any series, first of all, all of my friends have kind of made me swear an oath, a blood oath, that I would never write another series because it takes such a toll on me. Yeah. And part of it is that, you know, I mentioned that I don't write in order, and I'm famously or infamously not an outliner. I always think that I can, and then that's just not the way my brain works. I think it was maybe Lair of Dreams that I had 14 abandoned outlines, and number 13 was called Help Me Baby Jesus.
Number 14. I had a playlist called that.
Number 14 was called Jesus Can't Help You. For things that are super plot heavy like that, where you have to pull in all those different threads, I keep it all, it's in my head.
Wow.
So, which is probably why my keys end up in the refrigerator and the milk and by the front door. But,
all sacrifices.
I did know that that Memphis and Theta were going to stay together. They were going to be together.
That's really good.
The lighthouse scene is still one of the most romantic scenes in literature.
Oh, thank you very much. Oh, thank you.
So, Claire, you're, you know, very happy and satisfied now, right?
You have no idea. You have no idea.
But now it's my turn to yell at you. Why? Why did you kill Blind Bill? I had one whole emotion when he died, like actual tears coming out of my face, and that does not happen. I loved him so much from the very, 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 very beginning, and then he died. Why? Why did you do this to me?
Well, I would say that if you cried real tears...
That's why you did it. I hate you.
just to hurt you. It's always hard to when you. I like a redemption arc, and I often said redemption is one of my favorite words. And but he. He makes a choice in order to save the others.
Yeah.
And that was actually, I will say, I don't usually, I'm not a big crier. I also am not a big crier.
Yeah.
When I finished that scene, it was one of the times that I had to just close my computer and have a little cry.
So we shared one emotion together with that one.
We did. We each cried tears. it was a very difficult and emotion, you know.
Yeah.
Thing to write, but it's I just always say that I try to do what is right by the book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If what is right is tough or painful.
That's what we said, though, like in after book three, when we did Before the Devil Breaks You, we usually do like a wrap up of final thoughts, but we actually ignore, because we're going to be covering King of Crows in 2 weeks, because we literally did just before the release of King of Crows, what do we think is going to happen? And it's nice that we've gone in blind to a book and mm-hmm. being able to come up with some thoughts. And the first one was, well
Blindel's gonna die.
Because yep. he has to have that redemption. But it was like, how? And then throughout the entirety of King of Crows until the actual death scene, I remember messaging Amanda going, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? No, it hasn't happened. He's still alive. Oh, God. It's like the scenes with Henry and Memphis and Blind Bill in Louisiana were some of the most tense and horrific mm-hmm. scenes, because I just kept thinking, is it going to be Bill who goes? Is it going to be Henry? Because you loved putting Henry in those precarious situations, or Henry loved to go in those precarious situations where it was life or limb. Like in Lair of Dreams, when he goes into the graveyard on the island, and it's like, is he going to come out? Is he not? You crazy person.
Oh. You know, I've never thought about Henry being quite so reckless now. I'm like,
my God. I didn't know if it was because he was an expendable character, in theory, or it was just the way he just kept wandering off and he didn't realise what I was doing.
I actually don't believe in expendable characters. I am, you know, if I, nobody's a red shirt. I feel like even when there are the little sort of segments that are where we're kind of having this omniscient view of the larger world.
Yeah.
You know, I spend time with those characters. They have real lives and backstories and emotions and needs and wants. And I think part of that is because I came up from theater.
Yeah.
And I knew the die was cast for me when we in theater we had to do character analysis, and so we would sit down and write about our characters, and everybody else would be like, oh God, I hate this, why do we have to do this? And I would be like 20 pages later like, oh, I don't want to have to go on stage, I just want to keep writing about this character. What is their motivation in this scene? I've got 12 motivations in this scene. I absolutely believe that every character, down to like a dog who has a walk-on part, is important. If you think I wasn't upset about those cats, I was really upset about those cats. Now and forever.
Oh, I hated seeing the future with those cats. Can I ask why you didn't kill Roy? Because fuck Roy. Roy should have been set on fire 1,000 times. Why didn't you kill Roy?
I was What's wrong set with you? On fire.
I did not, because I thought it was more important to show Theta's control and agency.
Yeah.
Like her ability to use her power and also be like, but I can control, I'm in control of this power. Because up till now, she has been somewhat at the mercy of mm-hmm. other people and of the slings and arrows of life. And it is the moment where she is like, no more. I make my stand.
I got chills at that bit. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I felt that if she harmed him or killed him, then it was a perpetuation of the violence.
Yeah.
To be able to be like, no, I am absolutely in control. I have this power and I'm in control of it. And now, bye-bye. Boy, bye. I felt that was, to me, a stronger, that it was a stronger choice for Theta.
Yeah, she's definitely a better person than that. She really was.
I didn't think it was going to be Theta, though, that would have killed Roy. I thought it would have been the other clan members turning on Roy for some reason that will have happened.
That or, could still in fact, happen.
Well, yes, that's it my
probably
that's
has
my
happened
fiction.
By now.
That's in my fanfic. Or he had made a pact with the King of Crows. That was another thing that we kind of thought might have happened.
Yeah.
Is that Roy was going to make a deal with the King of Crows to get Theatre back, and then the King of Crows would have been the one who ultimately did Roy in.
Yeah, we would have been fine with that.
That one of the things that was, when I talk about like characters with backstories and how you have to like look at them from 4,000 different angles and yeah. really think about that. And I always say that people are never just one thing. And so with Roy, of course, there is that moment we get in the chapter sermon where we see that he, of course, has also been the victim of violence. You know, that talk about the belt.
Mm-hmm.
And so while it does not excuse what he's doing, we get a certain window into, oh, this is how violence works. It is a circle,
mm-hmm.
and it just keeps going. And so there is the thought that either, you know, we don't know what's going to happen to Roy. Is he going to have an epiphany? Is he going to change? Is he going to be the victim of violence because, you know, he's going to get into some fight with somebody who is going to be the wrong person to get into a fight with? You know, is something going to... it's sort of like, you know, sitting there going, well, he could either go down the path of more violence or meet a violent end, or perhaps he could at some point... begin to change, because humans are capable of change. It's one of the most glorious things about us.
Yeah.
So we don't know, but you know, yes, I do like though that Theta. It's really about, to me, it's less about Roy and it's about Theta. It's about Theta being able to say, you know, like,
yeah,
this is, we are done.
So we also kind of thought that maybe Blind Bill had made a pact with the King of Crows, and we thought, you know, his power is different than others in that, you know, he's aging and all of these terrible things are happening to him because of his powers, and no one else really seems to be that way. So we thought, did he make a deal with the King of Crows and that's why that's happening? Like, you know, because no one else really seems to suffer with it. So we thought, did that happen or he just has bad luck?
You know, it's interesting. I thought about a lot of different things when I was thinking about Bill. And that was one of the things I thought about, was like, ah, you know, clearly he knows the King of Crows. Mm-hmm. He's seen him before. And the other thing I will say, in addition to being a terribly inefficient writer and writing out of sequence, is that I will sometimes write a scene, no joke, like 10 different ways, and then decide the best way to go. Which is very inefficient, but I have been known to throw out, you know, oh gosh, I mean, I've thrown out like probably a whole novel's worth of stuff before, because
wow.
with each thing, I'm like, ah, you know, and I do, even though I don't outline, I ask myself questions. I have hundreds of notebooks where I just ask myself, like, well, is it this? Well, what happened this time? Mm-hmm. When did this happen? And, you know, could it be that this happened? Well, no, maybe not. Do I want chicken? Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. You know, all these different questions that I ask myself. And that was one of the questions I asked myself. But I also wanted, what I ultimately decided was that it was the misuse of his power. Mm-hmm. It was basically, we see he is sort of the embodiment of, this is what the system does to people.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and especially if we're talking about race in America, this is how people are destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it was really about what the Shadow Men had asked him to do was against his own moral code.
Yeah.
And was just really, it was a breaking down of him. And so it was like, you know, it was a physical embodiment of what the system was doing.
Yeah.
thematically, what happened in 1920s America in your books was, you know, historically accurate. A few time things obviously mushed around with. But what scared me as I was reading it is I'm like, this has just been in the news. Like,
yeah, this is currently happening.
It's terrifying. It's historical, but it's modern. And that's where I think a lot of the chills in this, I mean, it's modern history with a bit of supernatural elements thrown into the mix. And it was terrifying in that regard. It was mm-hmm. so well done. But has there ever been anything that somebody else has wrote and you've read and thought, God damn it, why didn't I do that? That's brilliant. Or it's in my notebook next to the recipe for fried chicken that I've never got round to doing and I really wanted to put that into a book.
Gosh. That's a good question. I'm sure that if what I will say is actually so sometimes if you know, when I get stuck, one of the glories of being part of a writing community is you can call your lifeline. You can call a friend and say, hey, I'm stuck. And I'm not sure if I should do this or that. And somebody says, well, why wouldn't you, you know, if you're like, I don't know if I should do A or B. And somebody says, well, why wouldn't you do K? And you're like, oh, K makes so much more sense. Oh. And in that regard, one of the people I think who was incredibly helpful to me is Holly Black.
Yeah.
And I always jokingly say that I am the antimatter to her matter because she is a very organized and methodical writer. And she goes from chapter one to chapter two. And I am absolute scribbled chaos, you know. It's just like, one time I was actually with Maureen Johnson, and it was like the 11th hour, and I was having to, I think it was maybe the first Diviner's book or the second, you know, I think it was the second one, because it was after Sandy, and she had to stay with me because they couldn't get back into their apartment. Mm. And so she was like, I'm going to help organize you on this book. And I was like, great. And I think you know, she wanted some Mind Flower so she could just check out. I think I almost broke her, but she's strong. And, but I just remember sitting there and I was like, you know, I was like, my joke is like, you know, she'll say, so what happens? I'll be like, well, there's a cat. Okay. But the cat is a metaphor. No, Libba, it's not a metaphor. It's a cat and it does something to the plot. Just like Carl Sandburg and the fog, it comes in. No, it doesn't. It's a cat. So Holly is also very good about that. And she will, if I start to go down some crazy road, she will say, she'll start asking me questions that will help me realize, oh, you know, maybe that's a choice I don't want to make. Maybe I want to make a different choice. So so I will say that in terms of the writing process, there are people that I can turn to and they will, you know, and they're so wonderfully helpful and they'll help me clarify with their questions. Yeah, did you ask something? Was there another part of that question that I've just totally forgotten now?
No, I think you kind of got it because it's like, have you read anything that by anybody else and like that is inspirational and I wish I'd done it? So it's a little bit of sense of jealousy, but I can imagine from the description you've given with like Holly and your community, it's more a case of that you're proud that somebody has read that and that mm-hmm. they're part of your community and you're friends with them. You're like, yes, I wish I'd done it, but I'm proud of what you've done. That's kind of what I got from what you're saying there.
Well, yes, and I mean in terms of like reading other people's work.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes, all the time I'll read things and think, that is brilliant. I mean, oh my gosh. You know, Holly comes to mind. Kelly Link is just, I mean, I don't even know how her brain functions. It's glorious. It is a glorious, glorious, the glorious sparkle pony. I mean, so often I will read people's work and often to beautiful turns of phrase, like Nova Rensuma is such a beautiful writer. Mm. And oh gosh, I mean, you know, then my mind starts to go blank because I'm like, But yeah, I am so frequently in awe of other people's writing, and I'm a slow reader because yeah. I will stop and I will be like, ah, this is, you know, like, wow, I just want to digest this for a minute. Or yeah. this phrase, I was just reading, I did a thing this week with Samir Ahmed and for Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know. And there were lines in there where I was just like, oh, that's so lovely. And I would underline it because I write in my books. I'm that person. I write in books. Especially if I'm going to interview that person, I will, I'll just scribble notes in there. I know.
I write in my textbooks, but I don't write in my fiction books, textbooks only.
My library at heart just died. Interrupted.
I'm sorry.
It's fine.
But you know, I can always buy another copy, right?
It's true. Support your favorite authors by defacing one of their works and then having another pristine
and then buying
copy.
That's fair.
First you make them cry, then you dry the tears.
Yes.
With the pages you've just ripped out of their book that has all your handwritten notes on.
Oh man.
I'll never be invited to dinner again.
It's okay because you can't leave your house.
And I was just gonna eat another bowl of cereal because I hate to cook.
Let's see. So have you ever thought with any of your works, I've clearly gone way too far, and then you laugh maniacally and continue?
I would say that's probably all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I started to think
bye,
that.
Oh, yeah. Computer weep.
there's almost always a moment where I'm just like, where I reach the, fuck it. This is what I'm doing.
I'm going to kill an 11-year-old child.
No, I think I meant more like the weird times, like, you know, like, I mean, like the tray in the forehead or, you know.
Should they have a tray in the forehead?
There's a happiness cult that does bowling and smoothies or...
Do we need to have the password for the self-destruct button be a PowerPoint presentation?
Yes, because that makes perfect sense.
My little nerdy heart loved that so much. I was like, oh, they're using slideshow options as well. Bravo, girls, bravo.
I am so bad at that shit that is also why I had to do it, because I was like, this would happen to me. I would be the person who would just be like, I have to save the end of the world by doing a PowerPoint. I can barely work my phone. Generally when we're talking about going too far, I'm thinking about the outrageous stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that's usually where I'm at my happiest, is when it's just like, oh, I can't possibly, oh yes, I could. Is the more ridiculous, I'm such an absurdist. So the more absurd it gets, the more at home I feel.
Yeah.
Do you like the absurd?
Yeah. The happier I am.
It's anything that, yeah, anything with a double take. Like, what did I just hear that quick? What? Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, fine. Carry on.
Okay.
Carry on. Fine.
There are times stylistically that I have worried, like, oh, am I gonna, you know, I think sometimes, you know, like, I think, oh, is this gonna be too much? But I think ultimately I just have to figure out, for me, I just always have to ask myself, is it true to the book? Does it feel somehow right? And you know, that's not like a in your gut feeling. It's like, well, it somehow feels right for the book. So mm-hmm. I'm just gonna write it this way. And you know.
And everything's being past the editor and you're like, ha! So is there any book that has changed your life? because we talk about books every week, and in some aspect they do kind of like, you know, affect us. So is there any book that's changed your life, a book from childhood, a recent read, something that you've read, you know, that got you into writing yourself, or gives you a certain kind of comedic value, or what book has changed your life?
Oh gosh,
it's a horrible question. It seems easy, but it's not an easy question to answer.
I think the first book that comes to mind is Charlotte's Web, and I think it was because I read that, you know, I read that on my own. I had chicken pox, and I was lying on the couch, but I think it was the first time that I was so deeply involved in a book that I felt that I was brokenhearted. You know, I was sort of inconsolable when Charlotte died. And I think it also showed me that in a way it kind of introduced me to the concept of truth. Mm-hmm. And that an author being truthful, because that author, you know, so there it is, earning my little trust, you know, because even though it broke my heart, it was a hard truth. Mm-hmm. And I remember just being, first of all, I was so in that world. I loved Templeton, and I was so concerned for Wilbur. And I think I identified a lot with Wilbur.
Mm-hmm. I was this, because you were out doing flips in the front yard and eating.
I think I felt at that point like I wanted to say like maybe I needed a little saving or something, but I think I felt that I was sort of on the outside. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, then there's Charlotte, who's so wonderful and so wise and so strong, you know, and then Fern. And I think I kind of wanted to be Fern, but I felt like I was more of a Wilbur than a Fern. And just, I was always a huge animal lover. So that was a great way to get me involved in a book. But I think that was the first time that I so thoroughly immersed myself in a world that I had a complete emotional catharsis, and I realized that was what books could do, that you go on this journey and that you come out different on the other side.
Yeah.
Because I feel different on the other side. So I would have to say that really was the first book that changed my life.
Oh, wow. Have you heard the latest audio version that has January Lavoie being Charlotte?
I was just about to talk about that.
You know, I realized as we were saying this, I was like, oh, I have not listened to that. And now might be a good time to listen to that because, oh my gosh, I'm getting
half emotion.
Are you having an emotion?
I was thinking, but it's a good time to listen to that because what is it but a group coming together to save someone?
Yeah.
You know, and to get people to look at things differently, to change their minds and realize that that everyone is important. And I think that is something that we are really grappling with right now, is that we have for so long allowed people, I mean, we've allowed our fellow humans to be without safety nets and to be just so close to the margin. And I think that we are really having to grapple with that. And so now might be a wonderful time to download the amazing January Lavoie. I could not think of a better person to do Charlotte. To hear her reading that story.
She did a great job. That was an excellent audiobook. I listened to that one right after we interviewed her. I was like, oh, you did this? Well, let me download it. Let me listen to it. And it was so good. And I had forgotten how much I loved that story. I hadn't read it since I was a kid. And I was like, oh, here it is. It's so sweet.
I have not read it since I was a kid. I think I reread it when I was maybe 12.
Yeah.
And I have not read it since then. So So yes, thank you for reminding me that, of course, I could listen to January.
Yeah.
What a wonderful thing to do.
And Meryl Streep, she was not too shabby, I guess.
Well, she's no January LaVoy, though.
That's right. That's right.
I'm sorry. My love for January.
Remember, January LaVoy is like 1,000 people at once.
Yes, she is.
She's phenomenal. She is phenomenal.
She's 30 people wearing a trench coat.
And a stylish trench coat at that.
Indeed. Yeah. So let's see. Oh, in every episode, we like to have a life lesson that we pull from the book. So is there one that you could give us from Beauty Queens, or we'll take The Diviners too, even though, you know, we already talked about that series, but do you have a life lesson from one of those books, or, you know, just a general one that you could share?
Why is it that the first thing that pops into my head is what my mother said to me when I was a kid? And it was before I had to take a bath. And she said, wash up as far as possible, wash down as far as possible, then wash possible. Which is not bad advice.
That's a amazing piece of advice.
Wonderful.
I'm stealing that.
Yep.
Officially.
Yep. I think that's going to have to go on a shirt.
Yeah. The only other thing I will say is that I would repeat what I said earlier, which is there are no expendable characters. And that one of the things that I learned in writing The Diviners, or that I was grappling with, was the idea that in a superhero story, usually what happens is a villain comes in and order is upended, and it's the superhero's job to restore order. But what if it is social order itself that is actually the thing that needs to be upended? What if that is the actual villain? And so I had to really think about that. And I would come back to Charlotte's Web and how we are all in this together. Mm-hmm. We have collective responsibility, and that we have to really look out for one another. And that we have to be questioning an awful lot right now in terms of what we have, and we're all, you know, we've been complicit in allowing these things to happen. Mm-hmm. But this is a time in which we really have to be questioning so much and realizing that we really have to be looking out for one another. And also, you know, when you take a bath, wash up as much as possible.
I love
that. That was straight from Nancy Bray, my mother.
So good.
Thank you, Nancy Bray.
Thank you, Nancy Bray. Thank you so much.
That's another thing I want in a sampler as well. I want curse words, and I want that on a sampler.
Yep. Okay, I'll do it.
I really need to learn how to cross stitch. I really, yeah. really do.
Yeah.
Is there any question that you've never been asked but you've always wanted to be asked?
Oh my gosh. Well, you stymied me there. Well, I'll tell you what, you can ask me what I'm working on right now.
Yeah.
What are you working on right now?
Tell us
what are you
that, working on? Please.
Tell us everything. Spoilers, everything. You like spoilers.
I'm working on a musical.
That is delightful. What's it about?
It's about a lot of things, but I said that if the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Rent had a baby and they gave Sweeney Todd to look after, that would be really bad parenting, but it might make for fun musical. So I will say it's vampires.
Yes. Oh my God.
Salt,
yes.
Salt.
Yep. All right. On board.
And it's hopefully it is both heartfelt and funny. And also political. So there you go. I'm trying to get it together, but it's been a joy to work on something that is so challenging. That is, I mean, I'm taking me back to my theater days, but it's also, you know, I think there is that, like, I always said that if I ever had a production company, I would have to call it Clueless Moxie, because it's just like, well, never done this before. What could go wrong? but, you know, yeah, I mean.
That's amazing. Are you working on it with anybody else? Are you collaborating, or is it just you?
I'm actually writing the music and the lyrics in the book right now. We'll see if that changes. But it's just been delightful to work on. And I do have musician friends that I've been doing this with, and I graciously provided their talents, which has been, which is also one of the things that I love about theater. You know, I mentioned that there is a community around writing, but the thing about theater is that it's, you know, it's a sandbox, and it's collaborative, and it's like, you know, you show up and you're like, what's going to happen today? And I have enjoyed not being, I know this is ironic to say, not being in isolation, though here we are, but that experience, I'm looking forward to getting back to that. I mean, I'm working on it obviously now while I'm home because I don't cook, but, but I look forward to being able to get back into that.
That's awesome.
At some point, because, you know, that's where it's at.
Do you have a favorite musical then? I mean, if you like Rocky Horror and Rent, and, you know, being taught all these inspirations, but what is your favorite musical?
Oh man, I love musicals. I might put Hedwig at the top.
Right.
And I also love Into the Woods and Sweeney Todd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there a musical soundtrack that, you know, you just put on and that's your jam for the day?
Oh wow. I mean, honestly, I think Hedwig, probably.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to think of what else. I mean, I also, I mean, then there are things like, you know, I could certainly go back old school and do like Funny Girl, you know, which I loved watching that movie when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many musicals that I love. What are some of your favorite musicals?
Little Shop of Horrors. That's my favorite one. Of all time. Right. All time. That is my favorite one. If I could be Audrey, I would be in a heartbeat. Or Audrey 2, even. I'll also be Audrey 2. That's fine.
Okay, so are you going to sing Suddenly Seymour for us?
No, because that is not a talent that Amanda has. I can do a lot of things, but singing and playing instruments, that's not for me. I can pretend, I can do a good voice, but I'm not, I can't sing it. I wish I could. I saw you singing on Instagram the other day, and I was like, oh, look at her, she's so talented, I'm so jealous. But I didn't actually cry, because I don't have emotions.
Because again, yes, we don't do the moisture.
No, mm-mm, no, no.
You don't perspire from the eyes.
No, I don't.
You see, even when I cry, it's half-hearted, because my optician said that I have poor tear ducts. Like, they're just so...
How dare
I'm substandard.
How dare they criticize your tear ducts?
That's so funny that you say that, because my eye doctor, after I had my LASIK, told me that I have petite tear ducts. Like, what the fuck is that? Why do I have petite tear ducts? Who has petite tear ducts, and why?
Evidently you, and you have to shop in the specialist area of the department store
for my tear ducts. Yeah, it's weird.
You have to get the petite tissues for your petite.
Do you have these contact lenses in a petite?
I require petite contact lenses, thank you. I need them.
You can only have petite Kleenex as well for your substandard petite tears.
Claire, do you have a favorite musical?
I don't really have a favorite musical. I have more... I remember going to see certain musicals at certain times. Like, I remember when I saw Phantom on Broadway. I remember when I saw Wicked for the first time on Broadway, and the Spider-Man musical on Broadway. That was amazing. I remember seeing Les Mis. It wasn't an Alfie Bohr, unfortunately, he was off that night, but the stand-in was just phenomenal. So it's kind of more I remember the experiences than the musicals themselves. I just kind of like put the music on in the background and just sing along to everything. I think probably if I had to say it, it would probably be Phantom of the Opera, because I like singing badly along to the soundtrack. Really badly.
That's how I am with Little Shop of Horrors.
As on, then yeah, it's like, yeah. I do remember Guys and Dolls when I was at school. Like I was in the background. Like, I wasn't on the stage. I was helping production days. And I absolutely loved Guys and Dolls. That was phenomenal. That was fun. So yeah, I don't really have a favorite. But
That would be a fun role to play.
Yeah.
Man.
I want to go watch a musical now.
I know. Oh, and one of my favorites too. Yes, I feel like now we should all go and just sing along to our favorite musical.
I think that
we should. It's probably going to happen. Yeah, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So is there any other projects that you're doing at the moment? Is there anything that you want to give a shout out? Any works that you're excited about? Or just things in general you want to say? Listen, people, don't make me come out of and shake you to go and do this. Or what do you want to promote?
My goodness, I would say honestly, I want to say pay attention to what's happening. Especially to things like voter suppression.
Yeah.
Oh my God, your country's so weird. Let people mail vote. I postal vote. It's easy. There's no fraud.
Yeah.
So that really, to me right now, is the thing, is I just want people to really be paying attention and be ready to, it's hard because I would say, well, go vote. But of course, right now, when you look at something like Wisconsin, you're like, no, they should not have had to have put themselves in harm's way in order to vote.
Yeah.
I would just say, I want everyone to be paying attention and to be, I feel like often we feel powerless, but I think one of the things that we do have power over is we can read and we can think and we can be conscious. And I think that those things sound very small, but they are, they're actually very big. And when we do those things, it influences action.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes. And then I'm trying to think if there was, I'm always reading something. I'm always working on something. I'm always thinking. that took forever, right? I'm always thinking. Wow. Yeah, that was that right out. Also want everyone to, be well and wash their hands.
And I hope to see all the way down everyone. And all the way up.
That's right. Just wash everything. Just
walk. I don't think there's any possible better way to have ended our questions than that.
Thank you so much. This was lovely.
No, thank you
for having me on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's fine. And now I can go take a bath and listen to Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh,
I'm already in my head.
Suddenly see more standing beside me. He don't give no orders. He don't condescend. Suddenly see more. He's here to provide me sweet understanding. He more's my friend.
So great. Oh man, this is just like made my quarantine.
Have a good night.
Oh yay, thank you. You're the best.
Thank you.
Whenever your musical comes out, Claire and I will be front and center.
I appreciate
we're gonna make
that.
It happen.
I mean, it could be a total shit storm, but you know what? Yep,
we're
we
there
will
for it.
Still be there.
It's bringing me joy, so I'm just gonna do it.
Oh man!
Let somebody else be like, "Whoa, that's a shit storm."
Is that can
to
it be
fair,
called
it sounds
that?
Right up our street.
It does. It does.
What's that?
That's right up our street, but I want it to be called shit storm.
You know,
and it could be all glittery and shiny, glitter shitstorm.
Now I just want to do, like, while I'm in isolation and quarantine, I just want to do a daily little musical with my figurines called Shitstorm.
Mm-hmm.
I'll think of
it. Do it.
I think
do
you
it.
Should, and record it, and let us join in.
See, you were talking about, has somebody ever had, like, a great idea? You had a great idea. There you go.
That's
that
the musical.
That would give to you.
Oh my gosh.
All
thank
right.
you.
Well, y'all, wash your hands.
Thank you.
Stay safe.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
All right. So that's it for this bonus episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss The Girl Who Could Move Shit with Her Mind by Jackson Ford. And we know who that is now. Ha 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 ha. Contact us if you'd like to join us for an upcoming Would You Rather segment, or if you have any books to recommend. Also, be sure to look out for the next Would You Rather poll on social media, and don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Goodreads. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover.no/er. And now on Goodreads at www.goodreads.com/fictionalhangover. And finally, a special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and on Patreon. Thanks for listening.